Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Today is July 31st, 2011. My name is Frank Weltner, and you're listening to The World Today. The situation in Egypt continues to become grave for the United States and for Israel, and for the other dictators who have worked with both of these countries, or at least with the United States. Tunisia's president has already fallen, and Mubarak doesn't seem like he has too much time left. The people are in the streets. They're hot on his trail, and they want him out. He's been there for 30 years, kissing up under the CIA, with money trickling into his bank accounts and the various banks where he deals, especially in Switzerland, but also in Saudi Arabia, Beirut, and other places. He's very, very well enriched by his associations with Israel and the United States. He is the one person who has continued to keep the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel intact, along with the King of Jordan. Of course, we can't forget the role that is being played also by the sheikhs of Saudi Arabia, who have done very, very little to destroy Israel's situation in the Middle East, although they have more than enough leadership and money to do so. They work with the United States, which has requisitioned parts of that nation to house its military equipment in case of emergencies in the Middle East, something which people in the Middle East resent. You can imagine having a country in America, for instance, such as China, requisitioning areas to keep its tanks, its airplanes, its parts, its bombs, its bullets, its depleted uranium stocks that they could use at any time to kill fellow Christians, let's say, in what's still mostly a Christian country. This would be looked upon by ministers and politicians alike as a threat to the national security and the honor of the United States. At any rate, the United States has invested a lot of money in Mubarak, and he's the only person they're able to trust to run Egypt. There's no one else around to trust whatsoever. Hundreds of thousands of these students and now older people have congregated in the town square of Cairo to demand that Mubarak step down, that his dictatorship end. The United States counters with saying, well, he's not a dictator, he was a duly elected president of Egypt. It was Biden who said that specifically, and then Obama has said pretty much the same thing. They're both embarrassed because they know that the people themselves want an end to this atrocious government, a government in which torture and arrests have been the name of the game. Parts of Egypt are almost like a little Guantanamo. The person that was given to the people to protect their interests is less than candid, to be quite honest, if that's the right word. Mubarak told the people, "I'm going to share power with a vice president, and that should make you calm down." And who does he appoint? He He appoints the head of his intelligence apparatus, which would be like the president here saying, I've asked Joe Biden to step down. I'm replacing him, ladies and gentlemen, now that you're rioting in the cities of America, with the head of the CIA to show you that we're really going to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's pretty much what Mubarak did. He gave the office of vice president to the head liar of Egypt, the head of their CIA, the intelligence director, and told the people, look, I'm being honest with you. I'm sharing power with someone that you can trust, the biggest liar in Egypt, the head of our CIA. Now, doesn't that make you feel better? Well, obviously, it didn't make anybody feel better. In fact, it made them feel even worse. But the really interesting thing is that none of these minority presses in America, such as the New York Times or the Washington Post, or any of the news agencies like CNN, which is run by the big star there is Wolf Blitzer, who used to report for the Jerusalem Post. He's now reporting for the American people, even though he only represents 2% of the American people. He comes from a tiny little religion that is in cahoots with the bankers and so forth. And of course, you have the same thing in NBC, where you have that lady who's married to Alan Greenspan, reporting every day, along with the other reporters at NBC, Andrea Mitchell. I find it really hilarious that Americans put up with this kind of a charade, that they allow the banking class to run their newspapers and tell them what to think, and to select the news that they're going to look at. I don't see how you can expect America to have a free election when a small, tiny minority of bankers who are in a religion that has traditionally hated Christianity is in charge of the newspapers, 95% of them, and of the news studios of America, as well as the entertainment areas of America. And even the music is controlled by them. And you tell yourself that you're living in a democracy here. No, sir. You're living in a little plutocratic dictatorship by the bankers who run this show. What did Obama do as soon as he got elected? He said, I'm going to change everything. What did he do? He appointed over 100 bankers to head his administration. Pretty much what happened in the Soviet Union when the bankers took that over in 1917. And they shipped 350 people from the banking classes over there, from this tiny minority tribe, to run the news papers over there, to run the army, and to kill 65 million Christians in the Soviet Union from 1917 to 1940. Which, of course, they didn't really print here. We had a reporter, I keep bringing this up, he won the Pulitzer Prize for the New York Times in 1933. His name was Walter Duranty. And he had interviewed Stalin for a year and toured Russia and talked about how wonderful the revolution was going and how they were beginning to enter the almost European methods of production, and everything looked just rosy. Of course, he knew that millions were being murdered in Byelorussia and the Ukraine, but he said nothing about it. Several years ago, the students at Columbia University, which is in New York, said that they thought that the Pulitzer should be removed from him permanently because he had blinded the American people through his position in the New York Times at a time when the American people should have known that Stalin was murdering all of these Christians in Russia. He hid the fact, and therefore he didn't deserve the Pulitzer. And they were thinking about removing it, and the New York Times had a hissy fit over it. And got their panties in a bunch, and in short, the Pulitzer is still there in the lobby of the New York Times for Walter Duranty, one of many liars that has worked for that newspaper and for the other Judeo-Bolshevik newspapers of America, including the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It was started by the Judeo-Bolshevik Joseph Pulitzer, a communist from Hungary, and whose Judeo-Bolshevik relatives ran that paper for many, many years and only sold it recently after it became obvious it was going to be unprofitable soon. We live in terrible times. We live in a nation that is very similar to the nation of Egypt. We are torturing people in Guantanamo. We had tortured people in Abu Ghraib. And we have sent people to other countries where they can be tortured without any records. It's called rendition, where you take someone, you ship them to a nation that loves to torture people, and you pay them to torture them there, and then after they're tortured, whether they break or not, they're killed, usually, so that no one knows what happened. This is what America does. America's a very evil country, much more evil than Egypt. Although Mubarak has tortured quite a few people, evidently, according to the news. But since we don't live there, we don't hear much about it, and I'm sure the people there don't hear much about it either. Because the newspapers have to support Mubarak, or they will be out of business, and their editors will probably be in jail. We live in a world in which these nations have taken power over the people and transferred it to the wealthy. In many cases, in most cases, the wealthy have aided in the transition of power to themselves and have created democracies falsely, telling us that these democracies represent the people. Well, the Egyptians don't think that they're represented very well, and I don't think the Americans believe we are very well represented either. I mean, it's such fakery. We say that we have representatives who represent us, yet every representative in the House of Representatives has approximately 640,000 to 700,000 constituents that he represents. Now, if he were to talk to one of them a day for 2 years, he would only talk to 730 of his constituents, which is only 1/1,000th of his constituents. So he obviously doesn't talk to you or to me, so he doesn't know what you want him to do. What are we supposed to think? That our representative is a psychic and that he has some sort of dreamlike mental awareness of everybody within his district, so that he automatically knows through some supernatural powers in his brain what each one of us wants him to do, and then he, like a puppet with strings on his hands, goes to the House of Representatives and votes for what each one of us wants. Well, I mean, such a fiction is absolutely absurd, but that's what the fiction is in America, that we're a representative democracy. When, as a matter of fact, we live in a democracy of the rich, where the rich pay these individuals to run for government. We've tried to have our own little Egyptian revolution with the Tea Party, and it's become Republicanized. Tea Party really wants to have a government that doesn't work for the banks or for all the rich. They want a government that works for the people. And by being controlled now by the Republican Party, it has certainly compromised what the Tea Party stands for. Because the Tea Party is now the party of the rich and the powerful and of the banking industry. It is voiced by Glenn Beck, who is one of the greatest demagogues I've ever heard. I'm almost jealous. I wish I could be that demagogic. That man is good. I saw him at the Washington rally, and I thought, oh my goodness, this guy is terrific. He's terrific. I mean, you talk about a PR man. What does he make, $30 million a year? Give him $80 million a year. This guy is good at what he does, absolutely good at what he does. The Tea Party was accused of racism, so every person that got an award was black. One of them getting a reward was a wonderful person from St. Louis who is, I guess you wouldn't call him black, he's from Dominican Republic, Albert Pujols. He's a wonderful person. He deserved that award. He's, you know, done a lot for people. He He married a woman that had already had children and has been a very loving father to them, something that you wouldn't expect an athlete would do. And this is a very holy man who, every time he hits a home run, and he's hit more than almost anybody in the world. I mean, you know, there's very few that have hit more than him in his lifetime. He points up to heaven to show that it was God that hit it, not him. He's a good man. But at any rate, the Tea Party made certain that every person that they gave an award to was not white. There was not European. It was really a good show. I mean, they really thought it out well. And the people that were there didn't boo them because they were black, so I would say that they were a racist party is kind of ridiculous. I don't believe they are, and there's always been black people that come to the rallies. Here in St. Louis, at one of the rallies, a black man came wearing he was selling T-shirts that had the rattlesnake on it from the Revolution that said, "Don't tread on me," and there were like 13 segments to the snake. And it was a symbol for the revolutionary people. Some people tried to beat him up and say you shouldn't be here, but they weren't the Tea Party people. They were the Democrats on the other side of the street that came across the street and started beating him up. He appeared on the Rush Limbaugh show, and he was a very, very intelligent gentleman. At any rate, this is what's happening in Egypt, to a far more significant degree than the Tea Party. But you had 100,000 people in the town square of Cairo yesterday and the day before. Might have been 200,000 or 300,000, who knows. It was a lot of people. And some came and went, so there were more than what you actually saw there. But you had the same thing in Washington with the Tea Party last summer, when they had their Salute to Patriotic America, or whatever they called it. I forget what they called it. But they had as many people, if not more. They may have had close to 1 million people there. So to say that that America couldn't have a situation in the near future similar to what happened in Egypt recently, I wouldn't count on that, because we've already had around 1 million people up there peaceably having a celebration and giving out awards to people, and you better believe that with the election in which more than 10% of the congressmen were summarily unelected and removed from office by these people, mostly, that Washington has taken notice of this, that they're not quite as sure of the American people voting for them in the next election, or of even supporting the country, possibly, if things get out of hand, if they don't do something to change what they're doing, like the giving away of trillions of dollars to the banks, the kowtowing to the banks and to Wall Street and to Goldman Sachs and to all the evil that they represent in our world. You're talking about institutions here that summarily gamble with your country's future and with its money to see how much money they can make by gambling. I suppose you've noticed that your gasoline is over $3 a gallon now, and that the barrels of oil are selling for anywhere from $92 to $95 a barrel, and it's getting to where we looks like we're going to have $100 a barrel pretty soon. Well, this is Goldman Sachs and these banks buying up petroleum futures and making money as they buy it up, and eventually they'll dump it onto the American people, who will want to get in on it as it reaches $150 or $200 a barrel. And they'll sell out and take their profit, and the American people will be sitting there as it crashes back down to $50 or $100. It's what they do. They're rats. They're rats who only care about their own greed. It's the rich. The rich have always made their money by screwing over the little people in the country. Always. By exploiting them. By lying to them. By buying up all of the newspapers. By paying the churches to preach about how wonderful it is to have a capitalist society in which the rich rule everything. in which everything that is going on in society is good. And that we may have ups and downs, we may have a depression now and then, but this is the best society in the world, ladies and gentlemen. We have no Mubarak's here. Well, if George W. Bush wasn't a Mubarak, I don't know who was. Mubarak's never taken his country to war, but George W. Bush sure did. And he made up all sorts of lies and used the intelligence community to do this for him. And they were lies. Weapons of mass destruction, yellow plutonium mustard from Nigeria, etc., etc., etc. One lie after the other. The lie that Saddam was murdering people, that his sons would rape women on the streets of Baghdad, you know, all this other BS that was never proven in a court of law. And when they took Saddam to a court of law, it was thrown out 20 or 30 times. In fact, his defendants were arrested, and some of them were placed in jail. And I'm talking about his lawyers. His attorneys were arrested for defending him. Now, what kind of a democracy is this that America has created? It's not a democracy. It's an American colony over there. They did exactly what we told them to do. We were like Britain in charge of America. And eventually they kicked us out. They said, get out. We don't want you here. They made sure that they gave away all of the contracts to their oil to any other country but the United States. No company in the United States owns one share of oil in Iraq. Did you know that? And you know why? Because the Iraqis are so sick of the United States of America and how it ruined their country, how it killed their duly elected president, how it reduced the country down to basically crumbled buildings and dust, how it destroyed their electrical circuits, which they had a grid there that was up all day long when Saddam was there. And now they have to wait now and then for the electricity to come back on. Because we bombed their electrical plants. We bombed their terminals. We bombed everything. We destroyed them completely. So of course they don't want us having a company in charge of their oil, because if we had a company in charge of their oil from the United States, guess what? The United States would use that as a reason for walking right back in and doing the same thing again. Because that's what the United States does, and they now know that this is a country that lies and lies and lies, and they can never be trusted. That it will even take an ally like Saddam Hussein, who fought Iran for the United States for 8 years, and then the United States turned around and made sure that they killed him. That's what the United States is all about. Treachery, deceit, dishonor. That is America. It's not the America that you're taught in your newspapers run by your minorities who want to imbue you with patriotism so that you'll join armies and go out and get your arms and legs blown off for the Duchy of Israel. No. No, that's not what America's about at all. America's very dishonorable, and so is Israel. And so are most of our allies, especially Britain. Britain is, look what Britain did to the world. They used to say that the sun never set on the British Empire. But what it really meant was the sun never set on the torture, incarceration, and murder of the English navies and armies around the world. In every country where they were at, in every port, they were beating up on people, shooting them, keeping them in line, bribing their leaders, and sucking all of the wealth out of the country they could get their lousy capitalist hands on. One of the most interesting things that I've heard in the lives of the minority press, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the TV news studios, is that the Egyptian people love the United States of America. That they think that we are great. And I don't believe that's true. I think that they find the United States of America to be quite disgusting. The United States has corrupted their leader into recognizing Israel, which a lot of the Islamic peoples wouldn't really particularly like. Which seemed to me that if you had people who came in and removed your religion from the holiest area of biblical times, which you used to control, that you would not like that country that was supporting that nation. In fact, you would hate that nation with a passion, and you would consider it to be an enemy of the state that you live in, especially if you're right next door to it. Yet Israel's in there kissing up under America and under Israel at the same time, receiving $1.5 billion. It might even be more than that. I keep hearing different figures. I've heard as many as $3 billion and $6 billion. I guess it depends on what you want to count as part of the payoff. But I remember when Sadat, the president before Mubarak, was assassinated. Mubarak was there reviewing the troops, and Sadat and several others were shot. It was pretty vicious. I've seen things more vicious than that, but that was pretty vicious. Mubarak then began to arrest people and set up his dictatorship. He did have elections in which he made sure that he would be elected. But what I find interesting is America says to them, we want you to loosen up and to have a more democratic administration. And yet we've sat by and watched him declare all political parties other than his own to be illegal. All political organizations are illegal in Egypt except for his party. Well, what kind of loosening up can you do when you don't have an opposition party? I think the closest thing you have is the Islamic Brotherhood, which the United States considers to be quite evil and someone that would be more or less like the Ayatollah Khomeini if they got into power. When they were at the rallies for the revolution yesterday and the day before and the day before, five times a day they would stop and they would bow toward Mecca. And while they did it, what was interesting was it was said by the news that the Egyptians stood ground as security for them as they prayed, showing how democratic the country was, how liberal they were with each other. And that may be true, and it may not be true. I'm not sure. I don't trust anything that the media says, especially the American media, because it has been known to admit being in the payroll of the CIA. And it was on the payroll during the Cold War, and several journalists over in Russia were arrested for spying. And as it turned out, they probably were spying. They were being paid by the CIA to take pictures here and there and to get information about Russia's defenses, etc., 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 because they were on the payroll and they admitted it. These were journalists for the big news groups like ABC, CBS, NBC. In fact, I remember when the Cuban rebels were getting ready to invade Cuba in the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was very abortive because it didn't work. That for a year before that, NBC, which I used to watch all the time when I was at college, and that just happened to be the channel that everybody watched at my dormitory. So that's the one that I watched, although it was a very, very good. It was the number one news channel in the nation. They showed these Cubans training to invade Cuba and to remove Castro for a year. And they would go down to these areas in Florida and show them shooting into these trees and so forth, and attacking each other and wrestling and doing a knife type jabs at dummies and so forth. And then they told how they had gotten on a ship or two, maybe I think it was three ships, and they'd gone to Guatemala or Honduras. And then they talked about how they were heading in an eastward trajectory, which would take them to Cuba. And Castro was going crazy. He was saying, the United States is trying to invade me. The CIA is trying to unseat me. And he went to the UN and said that. And then Nehru, Prime Minister of India, came to the UN and said, yes, I've studied this, and it seems it's true. The United States is going to invade Cuba. and should be stopped. At this point, Chet Huntley of the Huntley-Brinkley report, which we were watching, said, Mr. Nehru needs to keep his mouth shut. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I thought, oh my God, you've been talking about how these people are headed toward Cuba with all of this armament and bombs, etc., on these ships. You've been talking about how they were going to invade for the last year and showed them preparing for it. And now that they're off the coast of Cuba, you're saying that Netanyahu's lying, that the United States isn't invading Cuba. And the very next day, the invasion started. And within two or three days, it was aborted, and the people who were on the land, many of them were captured. It was very embarrassing for President Kennedy. And there's your free press. Your free press that works for itself and doesn't work for the CIA. Now, you see, Huntley was saying exactly what the CIA wanted him to say. I don't know whether the CIA paid him or not, but he was doing the work of evil in this world by lying to the American people, telling Netanyahu, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you need to stay out of politics in America. You have no business being here. And the next morning, exactly what Netanyahu said, exactly what Cuba said, exactly what had been reported by Huntley himself on his news show for a year, that these people were planning an attack on Cuba, it all came true. And he looked like an absolute ass, saying that Netanyahu should keep his mouth shut, that he doesn't know what he's talking about. When I heard that, that was pretty much the end for me of believing anything that the media ever says in this world. And before that, I believe it was 54, might have been the 60s. I remember Hungary blew up and was there were riots in the streets just like there are right now in Egypt. The people wanted their freedom from the Soviet Union and from the communism that was keeping the Hungarians down. And they had pretty much owned the country. The army had pretty much fled, and the president was hiding in the palace and so forth. And the Russians said, what should we do? And Eisenhower, according to history, said, it's your country, take it back. Go send your troops and do what you have to do. Because, you see, Eisenhower didn't want the Cold War to end. Nobody did. The Cold War was where we sectioned off Europe into 10 or 13 countries for Russia. And they weren't very strong countries. The strongest one was Poland, which was not real strong. The big one was West Germany. We had that. We had France. We had Italy. And they had little countries like Austria and all this, you know, little peasant countries. And the whole idea was that the Russians would use their media to harangue their little dirty bastards in their countries into thinking the United States was going to attack them and rape their women and children. And in the western part of Europe that was run by the United States, the bank-owned newspapers are doing the same thing, saying, you have to support patriotism because those Russian bastards are going to come in here and rape your kids. They're going to enslave you. They're going to hang you. They're going to take everything that you own. They're going to destroy your life. They're going to destroy Christianity. They're going to destroy everything that you stand for. And so these lies were going back and forth in the Russian newspapers on their side and the American newspapers on our side. And it was nothing but BS. That's all it ever is. When a country is talking, when a newspaper is talking, know that they're lying to you. They do not tell you the truth. Every newspaper worth its salt will tell you that they're against predatory capitalism. And yet every advertiser that they have in their newspaper, which is 90% of the newspaper is advertising, are people like predatory capitalists, like bankers, like the people who charge you $100 a month for your cell phone and will overcharge you any time they can. The car manufacturers who want a fortune for each car, they'll sell you a car for $30,000 or $40,000. It shouldn't cost you more than $5,000 or $6,000. But that's not what they charge. They charge you a lot more. Thank you. predatory capitalism. That's what these newspapers are about, and yet in their editorials they say, we're a liberal paper that protects the people. Oh, and by the way, why don't you buy this Lexus for $45,000 and see if you can't keep yourself poor for the rest of your life? You could be car poor. Or why don't you buy yourself a home? You know, increase your equity mortgage. They were advertising that like mad when the bubble on real estate was going on. Oh, yeah, buy yourself a bigger house. Use your equity. Pay off your credit card. Get yourself in debt. Well, that didn't work out too well, and that was your newspaper for you. Playing right into the hands of the creditors, the evil ones who screwed everybody in America and are still screwing them, and who took trillions of dollars and who forced Obama to infiltrate his entire administration with bankers wearing expensive Armani suits. And so you have no representation, but the banks own all of your government because they were the ones that paid for the election of Obama. They were the ones who got him to rise up out of nowhere. They were the ones who used their newspapers to tell what a wonderful person he was when, in fact, when he started off at Illinois speaking where Lincoln spoke at the courthouse in Springfield, no one knew who he was. And then, you know, a year later he was president. And of course these Bolshevik-owned entertainment studios were showing you films of 24 hours, programs like that, in which there was always a black president. So when Obama shows up, it's like, oh, we ought to do that, man. I've seen a black president in my living room now for the past 8 or 9 years. You've been screwed. You've been manipulated. You've been lied to. Everything that you've done is what they wanted you to do. You can't have a free country where you have billionaires and trillionaires owning your news, all of it. It just doesn't work that way. This place is as much a dictatorship as any Mubarak Egypt. And don't you forget it. Don't you forget it. As soon as your president was elected, what did he do? He started the war up even bigger in Afghanistan. And when he ran, he was talking about, we're not going to have these wars anymore. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. It was all balderdash. Because he did exactly what the banks told him to. Because the banks needed the money from the loans that needed to be taken out every time you have a war. Every day there's millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars that are borrowed from banks to support that war. And the banks make interest off of that, and without the interest they would collapse. You once again have been, you know, you've been destroyed by your so-called leaders. They're not your leaders. They're not your representatives. They are your enemies. Your nation is your enemy. Your nation has always been your enemy. As soon as they voted for the Constitution of the United States, the first act of Congress was to tax whiskey. And the whiskey farmers of New York, who had been making whiskey for over a century without paying any taxes, said, we're not going to pay that. What did your wonderful federal government do that's for democracy? They sent George Washington up there on a big fat pus-filled horse with a bunch of troopers, and they murdered those farmers. It was called the Whiskey Rebellion. And in every high school history book it says the Whiskey Rebellion was a terrible thing, but it gave power to the federal government and proved that it could defend its laws. No, it proved that it could be a vicious dictatorship over the people, and that the people had made a big mistake in voting for a federal government. And it's always been that way. We've been in one war after the other with this government. Well, I want to thank you for listening to me, and I want to remind you that what's going on in Egypt is a very dangerous thing. The likelihood that it will end up with a wonderful democracy there, well, it's not very likely. Look what happened in Iran. We thought, oh, there'll be a wonderful democracy there. Well, you see, there's no train of command leading to a democracy either in Iran or in Egypt. And even if they become a democracy, The bankers will take it over eventually if they don't already run it. That's what they always do. America's idea of a democracy is that it's not a democracy unless the bankers run the top echelons of the government. Because America's friends are in New York, the headquarters of world banking today. And they want that to be true in every country that exists. They want that power. They want that American dollar to rule everyone through the various agreements between bankers around the world. That huge spider web of international monetary funds that is run by the United States and whose head is always selected by the United States. And it's usually in that little minority of people that run the banks, that run the media, that run the entertainment, and that run every government that they can get their hands on. Thank you very much, and I'd like to remind you to please link to AmericanUSSR.com and to these radio shows on blogs all across the internet so that America can understand exactly what America's all about from all of the facts that are available now on AmericanUSSR.com, and it's growing every day. There's more and more that is being published there. It's like a historical WikiLeaks of all of the evils the United States has pulled on people. And you have to know history in order to know what your future is going to be, because America's still doing these things as it has for hundreds of years. It's still deceiving people. It's still a warlike government run by warlords who have families that go back for several hundred years of soldiers who would proudly stand up and say, why I had a great-great-grandfather that fought in the Civil War and a great-great-great-grandfather that was at Valley Forge. And you'd think these people would, you know, wise up and figure out they're being used when they go to war, but they evidently never do. They just love it. They love to be in a situation where their young men and women are being destroyed in a war, coming back with an arm or a leg missing or dying some horrible, tragic death, and for something that wouldn't have helped America if America had won it or lost it. Such as Vietnam. Who cares if they won or lost? We're still buying things from Vietnam. It didn't make any difference. The same thing with South Korea. I mean, people make such a big deal about South Korea that we won that war. Well, it cost a fortune to win it and to keep that country going, and we still have belligerency from North Korea. So, you know, we just have a standoff there is all we have. I'll tell you something. It's very difficult to win a war. Very, very difficult. The other side has to give in. Or they have to stand and do battle, which Saddam Hussein, by the way, didn't do. He told his soldiers to hide their material, let the United States come in because there was no fighting it, that our technology was too big. And then they waited for us to settle down, and they started pecking at us. And eventually, they were able to kick us out. Same as in Vietnam. Eventually, we had to leave because we ran out of money. And guess what? We're running out of money again because we're bankrupt. And so I predict that we're going to get out of there pretty soon. Well, again, I want to thank you for listening, and please begin to link every day. Try to put at least one link to AmericanUSSR.com somewhere on the internet so that other people will be able to come here and listen to me and to read what I have spent so much time researching as a librarian and putting here on AmericanUSSR.com so that these forbidden subjects can become illuminated before everyone's eyes, and so the lies told by this country will be recognized as the lies they are by what really happened in history. Thank you very much, and please don't forget to donate. There's a donation page. Just write out a check, make it out to Frank Weltner, or you can make it out to AmericanUSSR.com if you wish. And I will make sure that every penny is used to help this work. Thank you very much, and have a nice evening.